You'd think I'd have something clever to say at this point.
All right, so here we go with episode 3. For books and movies, this is a type of milestone. I don't really think it counts for anything as far as podcasts are related, but nonetheless, I'm still here and I've got questions to answer and things to say and things to do, so I'm going to go ahead and jump right into it. If you've been listening for the past couple of episodes, you know that I've been trying to find my groove in terms of the format that I want to use for the show. And after doing a bit of personal ranting and things like that in the last episode, I think that I'm going to not do that so much in this episode. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump right into questions, because that is the most important thing to me for this podcast. That's what I want you ladies and gentlemen listening for. That's what I want to do this podcast for. And then anything that is extra or anything that carries over into the next segment or that I want to say, I'll just do at the end of the episode. That way, if you're driving or walking or running or out doing whatever it is that you do, you get to hear the main points in the episode that I wanted to make. And on top of that, it leaves room for more than one question. So I think it can be a little more fun, and it allows me to answer more than one question in an episode, which could be relevant to something that you're doing. So in this episode, I'm going to cover two questions. Yep, I'm going to do more than one. And one's going to be a little more fun, a little more interesting. One's going to be more technical. And then I will cover a couple of extra things that are related to material that I did in the last two episodes. So you can stay tuned if you want to. Otherwise, you can listen to the questions and the answers, and then you can tune in next time. So with that, I am ready to answer the next two questions. Remember, these are submitted anonymously, so I don't have any names or anything to mention like that. So shout out to all you random internet people who are submitting questions. I very much appreciate it. Keep them coming, and let's do the questions. What do you recommend in terms of design patterns when writing WordPress plugins? I love this question because it gets to one of the main points of, or one of the main paradigms of, object-oriented programming, which are design patterns. However, the nature of WordPress doesn't require that you use object-oriented programming. Instead, you can use procedural programming. But since I focus on object-oriented programming, that is what this answer is going to include. Now, when it comes to your standard everyday design patterns that you can read by the Gang of Four or things that you can find on Wikipedia, I'm not necessarily going to reference those. I'll link them in the show notes, but I'm going to talk about the things that I use most commonly in my patterns and how I tie them into WordPress. And hopefully this will help give you a framework or at least some scaffolding as to how you could proceed with doing something similar in your work. Now, WordPress is built using the event-driven design pattern. That means that if you've ever written anything that does an action or a hook, then that means you are basically setting up something called a subscriber. It listens for an event to be raised. When it's raised, WordPress hops over into your code, executes it, and then hops back into WordPress. And this is a really powerful way to build an application. So when it comes to building object-oriented plugins, all of my plugins will consist of subscribers, and then these subscribers will listen for an event to be raised, and each subscriber will then delegate the responsibilities of whatever is happening at that event to a specific instance of an object. So, for example, let's use a really basic example. I want to set up a custom meta box that is going to take in user input. This means that it's going to display a meta box. It is going to save information from the user, and then it's going to influence something on the front end or on the public-facing side of the site. The subscriber will listen for the add meta boxes event, and then will delegate responsibility to an meta box class. Now, this meta box, we can call it anything. You know, maybe it's going to be a event location where an event location meta box where an event is going to take place. It's got an address. Maybe it links up to Google Maps, something like that. Regardless, it listens for this event. It says, hey, this event has been raised. I am now going to delegate the responsibility into this class. That class is then responsible for what I call the domain logic or the business logic. Now, I'm not saying I coined those terms, but that's really where the bulk of the responsibility of this functionality resides. For example, it's going to be responsible for setting up the meta box, determining if it's going to appear under the content or off to the side, its priority, the capabilities of the user who can access it. You know, is it an editor or an administrator? Is it a contributor who has access to it? It's also going to render the view. And I'll talk a little bit about that more in just a minute. And that's what will give users the ability to provide input that may influence functionality or a display somewhere in the WordPress administration area, the public-facing side of the site, or something just that's going to be written in the database. Now, I did mention views. This is another object that is something that I use consistently in my plugins. This is borrowed from the model view controller pattern. A view is essentially, it's a template in WordPress world. We call them templates. But a view is something that's rendered for the end user. And sometimes a view is just going to be read-only. It's going to provide content for them to read. Maybe it's instructions. Maybe it's informational. It doesn't allow them to interact with it. Other times, views will allow for user input. And that input could be a checkbox, radio button, a text field, text area, anything that can interact with the user. And if you do that, though, you're going to introduce another set of complexity and require another set of subscribers because you're going to need to save your settings. And when you do that, you have to go through the process of validating that the input is secure. You'll need to sanitize the input, then write it to the appropriate database table. After that, you will then need to retrieve it from the database table, validate it, and then display it to the user. And then perhaps you're going to have to control or set up how it influences what's shown on the front end of the site or what's shown on the front end of the administration area. So at this point, I have subscribers. I have classes that are responsible for having the responsibility delegated to them. And then I have views. There's an entire other category of classes that I often use in plugins. I'll briefly touch on these. This is not all-encompassing, but it hits the high points of what I typically use. First, almost all of my plugins include a registry of some sort. Now, a registry is a way that I can essentially keep track of the necessary objects that are used throughout my application. Now, I could keep track of everything that I wanted to, or rather, I could keep track of every object, but I don't want to do that. Instead, I just want to keep track of the ones that I will be using on the front end, somewhere else in the administration area, things like that. And the registry will associate a given instance of an object with a key. So then I can get a reference to the registry, say call a method on it like get, pass it a key, and then it will hand me back a reference to an instance of the object that I need. And this leads me to a second type of object that I need, and I consider these to be utilities. Now, these utility objects could be something like a simple factory, for example, that will take in some information, make a decision, and then spit out some other type, I guess I should say that it returns some type of value or some other object that I need. But a utility is a way for me to create a level of abstraction between the database and the application layer, and then also use terminology that's more specific to the domain of the problem being solved. Honestly, though, that's just a fancy way of saying that I have a way of naming my classes for the, like, I'm going to be dealing, like with our example from before, I'm dealing with events. So I'm going to have something with locations. I'm going to have something with a time, a start time, an end time. Perhaps I'm going to have a map. You know, it's just a way to, the thing with object-oriented programming is that you have a way to provide more user-friendly terminology for solving problems and encapsulating that in classes. You provide a layer of abstraction. And that's what this does. That's what these utilities do. And this leads also to the concept of a model. Now, a model you've probably heard of in other programming paradigms, programming languages, programming frameworks, that a model is a way that I will represent information coming from the database, but in the form of an object. So let's say that I have an event. An event has a start time and an end time and a location. Then I might have an event model. And that model will have attributes that are related to information pulled from the database, but then it will have methods. And those methods are what will allow me to manipulate the attributes. So I can change the start time, the end time, the location, whatever, and then write it back to the database. And the model will always represent what the database has. but we won't be working directly with database queries. Instead, we'll be working with objects. And there'll be another utility object that will be responsible for serializing information to the database and retrieving information from the database. So hopefully at this point, you're beginning to get a feel for the type of classes that I normally write with my plugins. I have subscribers, models, views, registries, utilities, and all of these work together to provide an abstraction over the database and oftentimes on top of WordPress, or even it works alongside WordPress to provide whatever functionality it is that I'm building for the customer, or even that I'm building for me for that matter. Anyway, I'm going to stop there because I could legitimately talk about design patterns and object-oriented programming for an entire podcast. So you can look at the show notes and you can read some other blog posts that I have written on this kind of stuff. For example, I've done, if you look up the tag on my website for object-oriented programming in WordPress, you'll find a whole bunch of articles like this. But all of this is also going to be included in the show notes. All right, so that is my quick survey of the tools that I recommend, or the design patterns, or the classes that I recommend when writing WordPress plugins. Hopefully that gives you a good idea as to what you can use in your work.
Today's episode is brought to you by WPSessions.com. WP Sessions produces training for WordPress professionals and has more than 130 hours of content that you won't find anywhere else. You'll find sessions that help you grow your development skills, improve your business, and serve clients better. You'll also find exclusive discounts for the services and products that you need and want. Visit WP Sessions today and start learning directly from well-known WordPress experts. Head over to wpsessions.com/Tom and watch your first session for free.
As mentioned earlier, I'm changing up the format of the podcast, so we have time for a second question. This one's a little bit different, but it's also fun because I think it's going to be highly relevant to any programmer or anyone who sits at a computer at a desk for a significant amount of hours per day.
What does your music playlist look like on a typically productive day?
These questions are so good. They hit on two topics that I absolutely love. That's object-oriented programming and music. And if you haven't read heard me speak on other podcasts, or if you haven't read anything that I've written like this online somewhere in an interview or on my own blog, then let me preface this answer with, there was a time in my life where I legitimately thought about going into music before getting into computer programming and doing software development for a living. I'm not even going to make any apologies. This answer is probably going to be a little bit longer than some of you would like or even expect. But let me back up and say that I am a big fan of almost all types of music. I'll give anything a listen at least once, but my absolute favorite kind of music is classic rock. I grew up listening to it. And when I say classic rock, I mean, I found my parents' vinyl records when I was, in fifth or sixth grade. We still had a record player, found it, never heard anything like it. And I picked up a guitar from there. My brother plays bass, and then we would track drums. We got a drum set. We learned to play drums. We would track drums and guitars, lead, rhythm, bass, even incorporated some piano stuff. I mean, you name it, we messed around with it. And that was some of the ways that we spent our summers in middle school and in high school. But I'm not a singer. I don't sing whatsoever. So there's a whole lot of music that I love, and there's a whole lot of music that I love to play, but there's absolutely zero music that you will hear me sing. However, when it comes to getting work done, there is also a part of me that really likes movie soundtracks, and I think most of us do, but I also like ambient music. I like trance, and I like listening to punk rock. I like listening to old country music, believe it or not. Sometimes that surprises people. I don't know. I don't know why. I think it's important, though, if you're into any kind of music, it's interesting and it's important to know how the music got to be the way that it is, how it grew into whatever flavor of music you like. How did that music come to the point that it is today, or at the point that you like it? But I've already gone on long enough. I haven't even answered the question. So for me, the playlists that I have for a typically productive day, this depends on what it is that I'm doing. Generally speaking, if I am writing words, so if it's a blog post or a statement of work or terms and conditions, you are most likely going to hear me listening to movie soundtracks or ambient music. As far as movie soundtracks are concerned, you are most likely to hear me, in no particular order, listening to Hans Zimmer,
Howard Shore, Tyler Bates, Bear McCreary, Alexandre Desplat, and the prolific John Williams. And sure, there's more, but this is legitimately right off the top of my head. Now, as far as ambient music is concerned, once again, in no particular order, except this first one. Hammock is my absolute favorite ambient music. I also really like ATB, even though he's more of trance, I would say, but I also like The Echelon Effect, February 4, The American Dollar, This Patch of Sky, Helios, Moby, Lights in Motion, U137, Slow Dancing Society. A lot of these you can look up on Spotify and then find similar artists. But those are the ones that, again, right off the top of my head that I can come up with. If I'm writing code, though, it's a little bit of a, more of a mixed bag. I could be listening to soundtracks, ambient music, trance music, or it could be something more classic rock, specifically from the 50s, 60s, 70s, some 80s. I'm not really into the hair metal or the glam rock or anything like that. And as far as the 90s is concerned, I would have to say that punk rock is really what I like the most out of the 90s. There just seems to be a lot of one-hit wonders. And don't get me wrong, everyone likes one-hit wonder, and I do too. But the one-hit wonders, they don't have what I consider to be quality albums. That is, they literally have one hit. They have singles. They don't have an entire album of just really good songs. And I'm somebody who I still like to buy full albums. So I tend to not be as much a fan of that. And I thought about coming up with a list of the various artists and musicians that I listen to, but that would take up the rest of the time that I have set aside for the podcast. Well, a few weeks ago, one of my best friends, someone I've known since college, he did a thing on Instagram that posted like the top 10 artists that if he had to listen to for the rest of his life, who would they be? And so, why not? So as of this moment, it could change tomorrow. It could change next week. These are the artists that I would listen to no matter what. And from now until the end of time, that's John Mayer, Fleetwood Mac, Hammock, Newfound Glory, Metallica, The Eagles, Reliant K, Creedence Clearwater Revival, MXPX, Eric Clapton. And for fun, I'll try to rattle off a few off the top of my head. Johnny Cash, George Strait, Casey Musgraves, Dolly Parton, Maggie Rogers, Queen, Bon Jovi, The Goo Goo Dolls, Blink-182, Anderson East, Fits in the Tantrums, Alan Jackson, Sarah Bareilles, Angels and Airwaves, almost anything Motown, Matt Quayle. And all right, I'm cutting myself off right now. That's enough. You get the idea. I like a lot of different kind of music, although there are a handful of veins of music that I like that I tend to stick to. So hopefully that gives you an idea as to what I like. Maybe you have found something else to listen to during your day, but that's it for me. So the last thing that I wanted to mention is something that I've been talking about over the past few episodes, and that deals with time management. I don't necessarily duck out now because this is going to be something that's super short, unless you're really, really not into listening to anything about this kind of stuff, in which I do understand. Anyway, something that I forgot to mention last time is that one of my new favorite features in iOS is screen time, and that's something that I think that is even better than Do Not Disturb. It works really well hand in hand with Do Not Disturb. So previously I hit on the idea of keeping your phone in another room unless there's an urgent call or a planned call, and I still stand by this, but if you have screen time available, then I recommend configuring a significant set of your applications to be disabled after a certain time of day in the evening and then re-enabled in the morning. The operating system allows us to bypass that, say, allow me to use this app for 15 minutes or something like that. But it does cause you, through that prompt, it causes you to question, is this something I really want to open right now? And on top of that, screen time gives you a report at the end of the week telling you how many hours you've used the device on what applications and on what category of applications. Now, this is cool because it gives you some insight onto what apps you use the most, so you can then get an idea as to maybe you don't need X, Y, and Z apps on your phone. And in a way, it gives you a way to almost gamify the way or how much you're using your device. Because if you say, hey, I want to beat how many hours I used last week by using it less, then screen time helps you to do that. And what this leads to is, you know what? I don't want to pick up my phone. Instead, I want to read something on my Kindle, or I want to go pick up my guitar and play something with that, or maybe I want to go do something with my family or whatever. It gives you more motivation to just get off the phone. I'm not saying there's anything bad about being on the phone, but I do think that sometimes we consume far more than we need to, but I digress. I just want to say that I think that screen time is something that's really valuable, and it's something that will help you more with time management. And that's probably the last thing, unless I get a question, that's the last thing I'm going to say about it in this set of podcasts. So it's a good way to bookend this trilogy of podcasts, right? And if that closes out this trilogy, I guess we'll continue. I'm going to go with it. This is going to close out this trilogy. It's the first three episodes I've done consistently. I've received questions. I very, very much appreciate it, because without the questions and the feedback and the comments and all that, I wouldn't have anything to actually do. So like the rest of the episodes that you hear in my podcast, you can catch the previous episodes and the show notes at tommcfarland.com/podcast. The notes for this particular episode are going to be available at tommcfarland.com/podcast-episode-3. And as per usual, I want to thank WP Sessions once again for sponsoring this show. I hope you check it out. If you are someone who is a aspiring WordPress developer and a beginner, an intermediate, or even an advanced developer, check it out. There is so much content there. And don't forget to keep the questions, comments, and other feedback coming. I have a podcast link at the menu on my website, tommcfarland.com, where you can straight up shoot me a question into my inbox. And if you don't want to do that, then tweet me. I'm at Tom McFarland on Twitter. So with that, we have made it through a trilogy. I've got more questions lined up for another episode, so prepare your ear holes for that, because more is coming. But I think three episodes, not bad. So let's say here's to three more. Thank you for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode.